Oh, you didn't know? LOL.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_bball. We're back after the weekend. We're going to be recapping Sunday's games, talking about a few other teams that didn't play either Sunday or won't play on Monday. We're going to be looking at the week ahead, week 20 or week 19, depending on your league's nomenclature. That's a tough word to get out. And then also previewing Monday for DFS and shining that bright player spotlight on the new Wolves starting small forward, Nemanja Bjelica. Lots to get to in today's podcast, so
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We will start with the weekend recap, and that's going over the teams that played across the weekend that didn't have a game on Sunday and won't have a game Monday, so otherwise I wouldn't talk about them on the podcast. There's only three of those teams to talk about here. The first one of those is the Portland Trail Blazers. Our good mate, the Chief, El-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He was pretty shit on the weekend. Again, he and Mo Harkless, they remain borderline guys. They're more 14-team league players. Harkless seems to have cemented himself as that starting small forward, and the minutes are going up and up and up. The steals are nice. He can produce blocks as a small forward, but him and Aminu are more streaming options for 12-team leagues and 14-team league guys to own, whereas Evan Turner's value has obviously fallen off in a very, very large way with Harkless getting that boost in playing time in Portland. For the LA Clippers, we hear word of Avery Bradley's groin injury is going to be a long-term thing. So Ty Wallace, who started the last game, put up some really good numbers. He then pokes his head back into having some relevance. Now, he needs to be converted into a full-time NBA contract pretty soon. I believe he's got 1 day left on his 45 days as a two-way player. CJ Williams is getting pretty close as well. And I would assume it would be Wallace that's going to get converted. And he is going to see 30-plus minutes, I would guess, or around 30 minutes at least, over this week or so, 7 to 10 days that Avery Bradley is out. And that's 14-team league valuable in most cases, definitely for 16-teamers and for some 12s, depending on what stats you need. And you should always really be looking at that, especially at this time of the year. Are you getting in the playoffs? Have your playoffs started? Where are your strengths? Where are your weaknesses? What are your opponents or your likely playoff opponents' strengths and weaknesses? And which sort of players do you need to add while paying attention to playoff schedule at this time of the year, especially? The other injury news for the Clippers, Danilo Gallinari, the Rooster, he suffered a bruised hand. I'm sure you're all stunned that he has to miss some time. It looks like he'll be okay, but anything can happen with Gallinari. It's not broken, but a bruised and swollen hand could keep him out for 17 years for the injury history that the Rooster has had. So let's keep an eye on that. Wes Johnson started in his place, didn't do very much at all. The other team we need to talk about across the weekend is the Miami Heat. We saw Hassan Whiteside play some significant minutes. Yeah, to be expected in the matchup they had there against the Pelicans. That has really reduced what Bam Adebayo has been able to do. A few weeks back, maybe a week, 10 days ago, a lot of people were, oh yeah, do I need to go grab Bam in 12-team leagues? Because he put up this good performance and Whiteside had been limited. I was a little bit lukewarm on that suggestion. I didn't really think that was going to happen. And we've seen his minutes be under 20 for the last couple of contests, and this is even without Kelly Olynyk in the lineup. And when Olynyk comes back, it's going to be hard to see Adebayo get anywhere near the 26 minutes that he would need to be a 12-team league guy. This is not to say that Whiteside's going to remain at 28 to 30 minutes a night. He could very easily play 24 or 25 or 23 or 22 or whatever it is in these upcoming matchups. But we've seen him start to establish a little bit more ascendancy over Adebayo, and then the return of Olynyk is going to further complicate that problem for the Miami Heat and their big men situation. Let's now have a look at the week ahead, looking at week 20 in the NBA. I like to call it week 20 because it's the 20th week in the NBA. I know many sites, you know, combine their all-star break into one matchup and that stuff. And that's another reason why I know I'm referencing it here and I sound hypocritical, but I hate referring to weeks because, oh, my playoffs start week 21. Like, what week 21 is it? Is it next week 21? Or is it fake week 21? Is it matchup 21? That sort of nomenclature, just tell me dates. And people ask me, well, what week should I end in? I always will give the answer in dates because it could depend. This is literally the 20th week of the season, but it's in a lot of cases the 19th fantasy matchup of the season. So if you're going to ask me a question on Twitter, try not to use week numbers because in general, I don't pay attention to them. And it can get confusing with that difference with the All-Star break there as well. Just another cool question. If you are on Twitter and you're tweeting me questions, if you have a default profile pic, meaning you've never changed your profile pic, I literally won't see your tweet. So just use the 5 seconds of effort that it requires. Go and put a different profile picture on there, because I have there's a setting on Twitter that you can mute default profile pics. I can mute the eggs, mute the silhouettes. And if you can't put that effort in, it's harder for me. With the amount of questions I get, don't want to sound like, oh, look at all the notifications I get, but put a profile pic there, and then I will definitely see your tweets and your comments. So make sure you are doing that. Let's talk about week 20 in the NBA coming up. Now, this is the only week of the season that a team has 5 games, and it is the Sacramento Kings. So you should be looking on your waiver wire for Kings players. Is Budrick Hield available in deeper leagues? Are you looking at Frankie Mason? Is Scalabissiere there? Is Justin Jackson? Now, players like Garrett Temple, Zach Randolph, Vince Carter, maybe Kostas Koufos, they're likely not going to play all 5 of those games. In fact, I'd be stunned if all 4 of those players played all 5 of those games if this wasn't the Kings that we're talking about. But even the Kings, I don't think they're going to play all 5 of those games. But those other players like Jackson, Hield, Mason, if someone dropped Fox for whatever reason, getting 5 games out of him, Labissiere, getting 5 games out of him this week is going to be a huge, huge boon for your team. Even if it is someone like Jackson who doesn't do very much, just the 5 games as opposed to someone who plays on the Spurs, Kyle Anderson. If for some reason you added Rudy Gay in a 12-team league, you had 2 games the Spurs play, Justin Jackson plays 5 games. Give me Jackson over Gay any day of the week. Davis Bertans, get rid of him. Add a guy like Budrick, who probably should be owned at this point with his minutes jumping up. There's a bunch of teams that play 4 games this week. The Clippers, the Hawks, Grizzlies, Raptors, Thunder, Bucks, Pacers, Sixers, Suns, Mavericks, Nets, Wizards, Hornets, Pistons, and Magic. They all play 4 games this week, and then the rest of the teams play 3. That's the Cavs, the Bulls, the Heat, Jazz, Warriors, Celtics, Trailblazers, Knicks, Nuggets, Pelicans, Timberwolves, Lakers, and Rockets, all with 3 games this week. In weekly leagues, you're looking at starting majority of the time all these 4-game guys, the 5-game guys, obviously, for the Kings as well. You're going to have to make some decisions with some of your 3-game teams. A team like Cleveland and Chicago, they've got really strong schedules this week, strong in terms of good ease for fantasy, like an ability for them to put up big stats. Both of those teams play the Nets. The Cavs have the Nets, the Sixers, and the Nuggets, while the Bulls have the Nets and the Hornets, along with the Mavericks. So some good matchups for those. Whereas on the negative side, the Rockets, we know that they're great for fantasy, but they play the Jazz, the Clippers, and the Celtics. That's a real negative slate in terms of pace, in terms of defensive ability of those teams, which limits guys who you may have considered. Maybe you're in a deeper league and you're talking about Ryan Anderson, maybe Luke Marmute, maybe it's Eric Gordon who has to sit this one out. I would think it most likely would be because he is questionable with an illness anyway, and his value has been absolutely in the toilet. So the 3 games, the poor matchups, it makes it harder to start guys like that. Of course, you can check all this out on Basketball Monster with our schedule analyzer and have a look at how your teams, everything shakes out for your teams. If we want to look at daily changes leagues and how this all pans out, we've got 10 games Monday. We've got 6 games on Tuesday, 9 on Wednesday, 4 on Thursday, 10 on Friday. And then on the weekend, we go back-to-back with 7 games Saturday and 7 games on Sunday. Total games doesn't always mean the same thing in daily changes leagues as opposed to weekly leagues. It's all about when those games are actually played. So even though the Kings do play 5 games, there could be a situation where those games were on those heavy schedule days, the 10-game Monday, the 9-game Wednesday, the 10-game Friday, and then you're only getting maybe 2 games out of those waiver wire additions. But that's not the case for the Kings because 4 of their 5 games come on low volume days, meaning you get 4 quality games. The only teams that come close to that are the Nets, who have 3, the Sixers, who have 3, the Cavs, the Heat, and the Blazers all have 3 quality games. So while the Cavs and the Blazers and the Heat, they only play 3 games for the week, utilizing those players, Mo Harkless, El-Farouq Aminu, Tyler Johnson, Rocket Rodney Hood, you can actually play those guys three times. Whereas players from the Grizzlies, they have four games this week, but adding a Dylan Brooks, adding an Andy Harrison, they only play one quality game. So perhaps those players can't even make your active roster on the games that they play, rendering them pretty useless as a pickup. So it is really important that you do pay attention to that. Now, our key streaming days for this week, in general, I like to look at eight games, unless we're talking Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. You might be able to fit someone in on a Wednesday with nine games. You might be able to do it Monday and Friday with the 10 games, but that really is dependent on the way that your roster is constructed. If we look at the way that, in general, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, how could we make the most of our additions and of our acquisition limits? And that's by looking at pseudo back-to-back. So, or either back-to-backs or pseudo back-to-backs, which teams play on those games next to each other. So you can add someone on Tuesday, and then they play again on Thursday, two games for the price of one acquisition. There's a bunch of teams that play that pseudo back-to-back to begin the week, Tuesday, Thursday. You've got the Kings, the Sixers, the Nets, the Cavs, the Heat, and the Blazers. And then a number of those teams also play the Thursday, Saturday pseudo back-to-back. The Kings there again, the Cavs again, the Heat again, the Blazers again. All of those teams, you could add a player on Tuesday and you can get action on Tuesday, you can get action on Thursday, and you can get action on Saturday. So that's three games for the price of one. The other team that has that pseudo back-to-back on Thursday, Saturday is the Lakers. So players like Brookie Lopez, Ivica Zubac, maybe you look at Josh the Hitman Hart, you can get that nice two-for-one bonus. And then the Kings are the only team in the NBA that have got the Saturday-Sunday back-to-back. So you add a Kings player on Tuesday. They play the back-to-back to start the week, Monday, Tuesday, but a guy like Justin Jackson may not make your roster. But from Tuesday onwards, four games, low-volume days, you're going to be able to use them. I would still add guys like Hield and Lepissier regardless. The borderline players are Mason and perhaps Temple and Jackson. They're those borderline guys that maybe you wait till Tuesday. But even adding someone on Monday, you're probably not going to be able to use that guy anyway. So make your ads for Tuesday or Monday. Get one step ahead of everyone. Plan yourself out for Tuesday and use those players as you see fit, or the best way to use them, which hopefully is also as you see fit. Let's go into the monstrous line of the night from Sunday's action. I don't think this guy's had all that many monstrous lines of the night, which is amazing considering he is the number one ranked player in fantasy, and that's Jim Harden. 41, 8, and 7 for Jimmy with 6 triples, 1 steal, 11 of 20 from the field, and 13 of 16 from the free throw line. I tweeted this out today. If he doesn't win the MVP, I don't even know what'll happen. I don't know what I'll do. He is that far ahead, in my opinion. You can make an argument for Anthony Davis, but the basis of your argument for Anthony Davis is, he's played sensational since DeMarcus Cousins has gone down. But how about and not to say he wasn't good, because he was excellent to begin the season, but he wasn't in the same level as Harden was for the first 60-65% of the season. He's taken his game up another level with Cousins out, but I just can't see how you can have anyone as your MVP apart from Harden at the moment. He's the number one player in fantasy, as I said, averaging somehow 2.5 points more than he did last year. 31.5 points, over 4 threes, 5 rebounds, 9 assists, almost 2 steals, and an underrated part of his game, 0.7 blocks, shooting 45% from the field, efficiency up from last season. 87 from the line, that's 3% up from last season as well, and still getting to the line 10 times per game. So the so-called Harden rule hasn't really impacted his free throw rate really at all. He's shooting 39% on threes, which is way up on last season as well. The Chris Paul factor has been a massive positive for him. It hasn't taken anything away from him. He was the player that we projected to be number one at the beginning of the season. That is coming true so far. It might not remain there, but he has been excellent this season, as everyone who's drafted him, and you could have got him late. I saw him going 6, 7, 8, I think someone tweeted him, which is just as bananas as it gets. And that is a significant, significant bargain to get a guy as good as Harden as late as that. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Kelly Oubre Jr. of the Washington Wizards. Oubre had 19, 2, and 3, hit 4 triples, had a steal and 3 blocks, and went 6 of 11 from the field and 3 of 4 from the free throw line. He's a guy that just always, you go, oh, maybe this is the time that we're going to go and add Kelly Oubre. Now, it's only his third season. It's a season where a lot of players take big steps forward, and he has taken a step forward this season. He's seen his minutes rise from 11 in his first year to 20 in his second year, up to 28 this season, and over the last month, he's playing 30 minutes a game, and his fantasy rank's gone from 393 to 275, now to 136, a big step up, but he's still inconsistent with what he does. I feel like his value is more suited to a rotisserie sort of format. There's no real one strength. 12 points, 1.6 threes, 4.5 rebounds, an assist, a steal, half a block, 43-84 with only one turnover per game. So just solid, you know, the assists are a little bit low, the steals are a nice number there, but everything's just sort of sitting at or below average for a guy like Oubre. Now, in today's game, Markieff Morris got some early fouls. Oubre came in and played almost the entirety of that first half, eased off a little bit after that. I don't think that he is a must-own 12-team league guy. I think in 14 teams, he is a clear must-own, but you can absolutely have him in 12-team leagues. With John Wall out, he is seeing his minutes go up. There'll be some fluctuation in what he does, but he provides nice free throw percentage. He gets you a steal. He hits you some threes. There's a little bit of points contribution, and he helps in just enough areas without being sexy or a standout in any other area. I'm not sure he ever really can develop into a guy that has a real significant fantasy strength. I don't see really where it comes from. Can he get 2 steals per game? Yeah, probably not. Can he start averaging 18 points a game? Probably not. Is he more likely to be an 18-8 guy or a 13-6 guy? I think 13-6 might even be pushing it a little bit too much. But I feel pretty good about Oubre at least being a chance to crack the top 100 next season in his fourth year, but he still does have a long way to go. And his game, when you look at everything that he does, it just doesn't look brilliant from a fantasy point of view, even though he does continue to improve each season and is now shooting 37% on threes after going 32-29 in his first 2 years in the NBA. The young gun of the night, DeJounte Murray, 13 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks, 5 of 12 from the field and 3 of 4 from the free throw line. Muzza has been really, really impressive since taking over that starting point guard job. He is the 42nd ranked player over the last 4 games in the NBA, playing 28 minutes a night, which helps, but it's 12 points on 49% shooting. Where he really excels is the defensive stuff. 6 rebounds, 1.8 steals, 1.8 blocks. Those numbers are out of control for a point guard. He hits absolutely no threes whatsoever. He's on 21% for the season. He has attempted only 19 threes, and in over his last 10 games, he has attempted only 2 and missed them. In the last 3 months, he has hit just 1 three. He's 4 of 19 for the season. It's just not something he's going to do, but what has helped his ranking move up over the last 10 games is the fact that he has gone from a 44% shooter over the course of the season to shooting 49% from the field, so finishing his twos at a much higher rate. And over the last 4 games, he's actually got his free throw numbers up as well, shooting 83%. His ability to influence the steals, blocks, and rebound category is not something you normally associate from the point guard position, but I'm not someone, as you should be well aware, that really cares about that. People will be like, I'm not drafting a shooting guard who doesn't hit threes. I'm not drafting a center who doesn't block shots. I don't actually care about where the numbers come from. If I need blocks, am I going to take a guy like DeJounte Murray who can give me blocks, give me steals, rebound the ball, get some assists, or am I going to go and try and get Yan Mahinmi who's going to play 16 minutes a night and give me absolutely nothing else? Yeah, give me Murray. I don't care where those blocks are coming from. I don't care where the rebounds are coming from. Work out if it fits your team, but it's really hard to suggest that Murray shouldn't be owned in every league at this point. I think the shooting does dip a little bit from what we've seen from him over the last month or so, but still, those other numbers is where really the value comes in for DeJounte Murray. Dart of the night. I tell a man's not hot. JJ Redick. 6-1-4 with 2 triples and a steal. He was 2 of 10 from the field. It was not a good night from Redick. He struggled a little bit over the last month outside the top 100. He is the 75th ranked guy so far this season, but the numbers have dipped, and the emergence or the addition of Marco Bellinelli just could put a little bit of a cap on what Redick can do. Instead of him playing 32 minutes a night, maybe he does only see the 28 or 29 minutes per night. And if he's only going to play 28 a night, then he's not going to remain a must-own play. His comfortable strength, or his clear strength, is his three-point shooting. Yes, he does shoot the free throws immaculately. 94% on 3 attempts is really, really good, and it is a big boost there. But his value comes from threes, and we know how easy it can be to find threes. You get your Tone Tollivers, Reggie Bullocks, you can go get Troy Daniels. You can get threes from other areas. And if Riddick's going to go from 32 minutes a night to 28 minutes a night, in a lot of cases, especially 10-team leagues, I think you can do better. And in 12-team leagues, he might be really, you know, starting to push down to being your worst player on your team, and having that spot open for streaming might become something that does actually work in your favor. But everyone's got to view that on their own personal team basis and check how it goes. But things are definitely heading in the wrong direction with Redick, and there is an explanation for it. It's a part of it. Well, he's also shooting pretty shit at the moment as well, just 42% over the last 11 games. But it's the arrival of Marco Bellinelli, who gives them another three-point shooting option to help spread the floor with Simmons and Embiid out there, that can reduce those minutes on Redick, who is also returning from a marginal crack in his leg, also known as a fracture. So that could be another reason that we're seeing the lower minutes from JJ at this point. So bear that in mind when considering what your roster looks like and whether Redick remains a player who is a must-own guy. In a lot of cases, the answer to that will be no. Let's talk about these games now in a little bit more detail as we break down the box scores across the NBA. There were 5 games on Sunday. The first one of those, the Detroit Pistons and the Charlotte Hornets. Just a terrible, terrible performance from the Pistons. I've said a few things positive about Stan Van Gundy over the year, last year, so I think he's a decent coach. But some of the shit that's going on with him at the moment is it's pretty hard to defend. I don't understand how you would trade away Avery Bradley and then you just don't play Luke Kennard. I don't know why his minutes are going down when he is the best three-point shooter on this team. He didn't play in the first half in this game and logged only 6 minutes. His role has been jerked back and forth consistently. And I know you can say, oh, it's Van Gundy, he hates rookies. Maybe just don't hate rookies. Maybe you should actually just like the players who are good players. Having some preconceived notion in your head, rookies are shit, can't play them, it's a detriment to your team. You know who's also shit? Langston Galloway. You know who's also shit? Jameer Nelson. Like, much worse than Langston Galloway. But they're playing over Kennard. We had 12 minutes of Galloway here. He put up a 12 trillion, almost the Tone Snell. Nelson had 6 minutes for 0 points with 1 rebound and 1 assist. Now, Kennard wasn't much better. He only had 1 assist in his 6 minutes, but didn't take a single shot, completely out of the flow of things. Just really, really weird stuff. Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin both saw their minutes reduced because the Pistons are in a heavy, starting a heavy stream of games here, 6 games in 9 nights. So Eric Morland was back in the rotation. He went scoreless, didn't take a shot, but had 9 boards. For those of you in deeper leagues, Morland can have some use. Drummond had 14 and 14, and Griffin had 24 and 4. Stan Johnson, 28 minutes again. This is the new norm for Johnson. He can be dropped in 12-team leagues, 9 and 3. Well, Jimmy Ennis had 9, 1 and 1 in 20 minutes. Well, Ish Smith, serviceable once more, 13, 1 and 8. You just keep holding him. Reggie Jackson's return is going to cut into that, but I don't imagine Jackson's coming back and playing 27, 28 minutes the first night that he is there after being out for such an extended period of time with that ankle injury. Onto the Hornets, another big game, another good game from them. Batum was strong, 15, 5, and 9 with 3 steals and a block and 4 triples. While Carter Williams turning the clock back, 10, 3, and 6 with 3 steals and a block. He even hit a triple. That's how you know things are going your way when Michael Carter Williams is knocking down long bombs. They did not need to play their starters big minutes at all. 28 minutes only for Kemba Walker. Dwight only played 23 and double-doubled. While Frank Kaminsky had another decent game, 13 and 8 for Frank the Tank with 3 triples in 23 minutes. Marvin Williams and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, they're just not going to play big minutes. Kaminsky's coming in and providing decent value. I don't think that he is a 12-team league guy, but he is a comfortable streaming option. I would have him over Marv. I would have him over Kidd-Gilchrist in 12-team leagues. Just someone to keep an eye on is Kaminsky, especially for these low-volume days like today. Jeremy Lamb had 11 points with 5 assists, while Cody Zeller, I'm a big Cody Zeller man, 13-5 in 21 minutes. Greg Ehrenberg wanted me to do the player spotlight on Cody Zeller today. Maybe another day, Greg. We're going with Bielitsa today, but Zeller was really strong there. Really hard to consider him a 12, 14, or 16 team league guy just with the limited minutes. And Malik Monk continues to just be atrocious. You can give the Pistons as much shit as you want for picking Kennard over Donovan Mitchell. Malik Monk has been just unbelievably worse than Kennard, and of course, much worse than Dodon in Utah, but they don't seem to get as much shit as what the Pistons do for selecting Kennard ahead of Mitchell. Let's go on to the next game, an overtime game between the Pelicans and the Bucks. Drew Holiday's big year continues. I am a huge Drew Holiday fan, as you would know if you've been listening to this podcast for quite a while. 36-9-6, a steal and a block, while Tone Davis's crazy, crazy run, it sort of ended, but in saying that it ended, he still had 27-13 with two steals and two blocks as Davis continues his run towards getting close to that number one fantasy rank. Rajon Rondo, I had no idea what to expect from this guy from game-to-game basis. He could play 18 minutes, he could play 38 minutes. He played 36 here, Rondo, had 16-8-12 with two steals. And you look at that and you go, shit, you know what? I love those sort of numbers from Rondo. He shot 64% from the field. So immediately we can say Rondo's not shooting 64% from the field every game. But the minutes are the tough one. Does he play 23? Does he play 28? Does he play 33? It seems to be just random with Rondo and with Elvin Gentry. But it's hard to leave that on the waiver wire. Emeka Okafor started once more. Only the 16 minutes for Okafor. Had 5 block shots in the last game. 0 here. Talk about just really deep league stuff for Okafor, although he is the best Okafor in the NBA. Well, Nick Mirotic, doesn't matter that he's coming off the bench, 14-7, a 3, a steal, 4 blocks for Mirotic, comfortable must-own guy, while Etuan Moore had 2 triples in 36 minutes, and he is just a deeper league guy. Shout out to Walt Lemon for being a real person as well. He played 10 seconds. On to the Bucks side of things. I said it the other day, I wrote it in the box score comments, that the Bucks, yes, they weren't going with a 3-man center rotation. Turns out I was wrong and they went with a 3-man center rotation. Thon McCur and Tyler Zeller. McCur played 15 and Zeller played 11, but at least it didn't really impact the Muppet John Henson. He played 27 minutes here. 12-7 with 2 blocks. I hate the 3-man center rotation, especially when Zeller and McCurr just aren't that good, unless we're talking about McCurr playing against the Raptors, and then he turns into Hakeem Olajuwon. Henson still should be owned in all leagues, but there is going to be this concern that some nights you'll see 22 out of Henson and 16 for Zeller, because Joe Prunty is obviously just channeling the ghost of Jason Kidd and going, what wrong decision can I make as often as possible? We'll see how often that does happen. Eric Bledsoe had 20 points with 9 rebounds and 5 assists, while Chrissy Middleton was strong once more. It wasn't Yanni's best game, 20 points on 18 shots, but still stuffed the stat sheet. And Tone Snell, just one of the worst fantasy players around. Jabari Parker, 24 minutes for Jabari, 18-6, 2 triples. This is what you were hoping if you'd been stashing him. Now, he had been really, really poor up until now. I think it's still going to be a really shaky road. And this is not, hey, this is the new expectation. 18 points in 24 minutes. Let's go. Lock it in. Bang. That's not what's going to happen for Jabari each night. It's still going to be a rough road. If you're in the playoffs, locked in, ready to go in a couple of weeks, you hold him. You see what happens. You see how this progresses. If you're in a battle and there are other options out there, or you need to really just churn through the games to make sure you get into the playoffs, holding on to a guy like Jabari might not be the best option. He might only play 20 minutes in the next game and have 6 points. This was far and away his best game since returning. He led the team in usage, and he showed what he can do, and it's good to see that's still there, but it's not going to be an every night thing. I also love myself some Sterling Brown, 9-4 with 2 steals and 2 blocks in 20 minutes for Sterlo. Just a deeper league guy, but in terms of long-term value, I think he's a better player than Tone Snell. I think he could already be a better player than Tone Snell, but of course, we still have the Matty Dellavedova and Malcolm Brogdon returns to factor into that, so not a huge amount to like about Brown for at least this season. The next game, the San Antonio Spurs and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs, who came out on fire the first couple of games after the trade, struggled here, and they got smashed by a Spurs team on the road without, of course, Kawhi Leonard and Manu Ginobili. We've highlighted DeJounte Murray's big game already. They went with a different starting lineup. Pau Gasol's back starting now alongside LaMarcus Aldridge, with Davis Bertans out of the rotation entirely. That's a bit of a stunner to me. But they also started Pat Mills over Danny Green. I'm not sure this is necessarily going to be a long-term thing, but I would expect the next few games at least that Mills does start over Green. Millsy played 35 minutes and had 11, 2 and 5, while Green had a stunning 22 points in 22 minutes, which included 5 triples, a steal and a block. But if you have played fantasy basketball for any length of time, you know that that is just no way that Danny Green is going to be able to replicate that sort of scoring output on a nightly basis. So use him for the defensive numbers, use him as an occasional, hey shit, maybe he hits 5 threes and goes big, but that's not going to be a regular thing. Rudy Gay, in his second game back, played 16 minutes, 4 and 4. Some of it might be minutes restriction. Some of it also just be that the Spurs just aren't going to play in big minutes. I tend to side on the latter side of that argument, and I don't think he's going to be playing 28 or 29 a night with Kawhi out. I have 0% faith that that is going to be the case, and he is not, in my opinion, a worthy guy for 10 or 12 team leagues. Kyle Anderson had 10, 6, and 4 with 2 steals and 3 blocks. His defensive ability is strong. He is not a high upside player at all, but he can comfortably just sit himself inside the top 100 from now until the end of the season. LaMarcus had 27 and 6, a strong game from him. On to the Cavs.
LeBron James.
33, 13, and 9. A huge game from LeBron, but really very little else from anybody else on this team, especially the starters. Georgie Hill, who'd played over 30 in the previous two games, played only 25 and had 2 and 2, while Jordy Clarkson saw his minutes come back up. He had 17 points with very little else in 23 minutes. I would comfortably have Hill over Clarkson. I don't think that either of them... Clarkson is not a 12-team guy unless they make a change and start him and play him 32 minutes, which I don't think will be the case. And Hill is a borderline guy. Rocket Rodney Hood had 6 points in 28 minutes. He should be nowhere near your 12-team leagues, while the plumber J.R. Smith was putrid. It was always going to drop off that hot shooting. 2 points in 21 minutes, and Chetty Osman had 4 in 15, and his role has significantly declined recently as Kyle Korver's minutes have jumped back up. Larry Nance. Foul trouble bothered him, 4 fouls in 15 minutes, but this is why we like him for fantasy. 4 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks in 15 minutes. You move that to 30 minutes, and it never works like this, but imagine in 30 minutes, 8, 8, and 8 with 4 steals and 4 blocks. That'd be in contention for either waiver wire line of the night or monstrous line of the night. That is production right across the board. If I do own Larry Nance, I don't think he's going to be stuck at 15 minutes a night. He's a clearly better option than what Tristan Thompson is, and it is better than Jeff Green, obviously not at scoring, but doing the other defensive things. So he only needs 23 to 24 minutes a night to get close to that top 100, and there's a real possibility that he gets that the majority of nights out from here on out. The Houston Rockets and the Denver Nuggets. Chrissy Paul was good, 23, 5, and 6, while Trevor Ariza, in his second game back from a hamstring injury, 14 and 6 with 3-3. So just have a look. If he is on your waiver wire, just go grab Trev. PJ Tucker started once more over Ryan Anderson. 24 minutes for PJ, 20 minutes for Anderson. Of course, you're not owning Anderson in anything other than 16-team leagues. Tucker's really that sort of depth as well, and this was a game without Eric Gordon. Also should be aware that no Eric Gordon and Gerald Green still didn't play. You can piss Gerald Green off in almost any league that you own him in. When Gordon returns, it's going to be interesting to see how the minutes go between Tucker, Mamute, Joe Johnson, Ryan Anderson, those sort of guys. Johnson played 29 minutes here. Wasn't particularly good, and I wouldn't be getting any sort of excitement level happening about owning him after seeing that playing time. While Brandon Wright saw his first action for Houston with Nene resting, 4 and 2 for Wright in those 15 minutes with a nice block late as well. But he's not going to play most nights, so very little to see. For the Nuggets, Farton Will Barton, 25, 7, and 6 with 3 steals. He just infuriates me watching him play, but that's a really good line, and clearly he needs to be owned. While Wilson Chandler, old baby neck, he'd been putting up some big numbers. It dropped a little bit here, 10, 3, and 3 with 3 blocks. The 3 blocks really saved it. This is a more realistic expectation, I believe, for him for the rest of the season, as opposed to these other bonkers numbers he'd been putting up. And again, if you're looking at... 2 weeks in the future, planning for playoffs. I'm not sure Chandler is going to be in your best lineup. The Blue Arrow had 19, 2 and 5, while Nikola Jokic had 21, 14 and 8, a steal and a block. Didn't get the triple double after getting 3 consecutive ones prior to this game. Wasn't a good game for Gaz Harris. I can't play the nice Gary drop. 6, 2 and 2, but 5 steals and a block is pretty nice. Just that shooting, 2 of 12 from the field and just 2 of 5 from the free throw line was a disaster. Otherwise, those 5 steals would have been very, very sexy on top of a 14-point night, which is yeah, if you go by his usual shooting ability, wouldn't have seemed crazy to have occurred. The last game of the night, the Sixers and the Wizards. Joel Embiid on a back-to-back, in foul trouble, still played 32 minutes, had 25, 10 and 4, 2 threes, 2 steals and a block. So we love that, as we do with Benny Simmons' 16, 8 and 8 with a steal and a block. The problem is everyone else was shithouse. Bob Cobb had 9 and 2 in 30 minutes with 2 steals. I talked about Redick already. Dario Saric, just horrible shooting. 5 of 17 for Saric, 13 and 8 with 3 assists and 2 triples for Dario. He'd been playing exceptionally well. His shooting had been through the roof. We're seeing it come a little bit back down to earth at the moment for Saric. Not saying that he's someone that you need to drop, but over the last 2 weeks, he is outside the top 120 because that 50% shooting that he was at maybe in January, he's down at 42% over the last 5 games, and that is really impacting what he is able to do fantasy-wise. So we'll keep an eye on what Saric is doing, but it is a bit of a slump, which was to be expected after he was going through a real hot streak. They played Rashawn Holmes alongside Joel Embiid in this game, but it looks like the Sixers are going to be acquiring Ersan Ilyasova. So guys like Amir Johnson, Rashawn Holmes, Trevor Booker, they're all going to cop a little bit of a hit. I don't imagine Saric, and I definitely, Embiid's not copping any sort of hit with Ilyasova arriving. Maybe Saric loses a minute or two, but it's going to come from Trevor Booker more, Amir Johnson, Rashawn Holmes also, as Booker starts to play a little bit more five, cutting into what Amir and Rashawn can also do. On to the Wizards, Brad Beal, 24, 5 and 8, and Otto Porter had 23, 7 and 3. Porter has been immense with John Wall out. Absolutely fantastic, as has Tomas Satoransky. Didn't shoot the ball. Actually, that's not true. Didn't shoot the ball often. 7 points on 3 shots, but 7 rebounds, 10 assists, 1 steal. Continues to look excellent, and he should be owned in all leagues. The Polish hammer, Marcin Gortat, had 13 and 10 in his 28 minutes. More those increased minutes to help combat Embiid, so I wouldn't be getting overly excited. While Morris had 8 and 5 in 27 minutes, and definitely not someone that I'm overly interested in standard leagues. I thought the boost of Johnny Wall being out might help him. It did for a couple of games, but he has just reverted back to being a fairly putrid fantasy option. That does it for all of Sunday's actions. A quick reminder, I am the new host of the Locked On NBA podcast on Mondays. I just recorded my first episode of Locked On NBA. Go and check it out. We spoke about the Kawhi Leonard injury, Jimmy Butler's injury, and the surging Toronto Raptors and their number one ranked bench unit. So go and check out Locked On NBA. Locked On NBA, which is now 5 days a week, and I host one day of those shows. So go check that out, download and subscribe to that podcast as well. Let's go to the player spotlight now. And today, multiple requests for this guy. We're looking at the Minnesota Timberwolves' new starting small forward, and that is Nemanja Bjelica. He gets that starting job because Jim Butler has a torn meniscus. Butler's out for 4 to 6 weeks, and in nearly every fantasy league outside of keeper or dynasty leagues, Butler can be dropped. Bjelica has started 5 games so far this season, and he was fairly strong in those games. But it's not like this is an excellent option, a guy who's going to be just racking up stats left, right, and center. He's going to be a fairly low usage player as Towns, Wiggins, and Jeff Teague absorb a lot of that Jimmy Butler usage. We're going to see Taj Gibson get some extra touches as well, and Bjelica is sort of just going to float around. He can absolutely be grabbed in 12-team leagues. Anything deeper, I would add him. But I don't look at him as this excellent, fantastic, superb type of standard league player. If he shoots the ball well, which he hasn't been of late, just 42% over the last 3 months, he can be a guy that does finish from here on out as a top 120 sort of player. But it is a little bit of a stretch for him to think that he's going to be a top 100 or top 80 sort of a guy. He just won't get that level of usage. He won't be a guy that racks up defensive numbers. He's not blocking shots. He's not a high-level rebounder. He'll hit some threes. He'll do a bit of scoring. He'll get a steal. He just is like a poor man's Kelly Oubre at this point. And if he can get that efficiency up, that can help you a little bit there. Bjelica is almost 30 years of age, so even though he's only been in the NBA, this is his third season. We're talking about a guy who's clearly already hit his peak. He's been okay through his first couple of seasons, but definitely nothing to really write home about as this superb option that's really just waiting for an opportunity to break out or anything along those lines. I think he's more of a 4 than a 3, so he's going to be playing out of position. For the Timberwolves now, but advanced numbers-wise, it's been his best season. His win shares are up, his box score plus-minus is up, but the team is better with him sitting on the bench than with him on the court, and that's to be expected with a team that plays their starters such heavy, heavy minutes as the Timberwolves do. That bench is made to look much worse because they're playing so few minutes and they're not getting integrated with the starters as much as other teams would. This is an opportunity for Bielitsa. He's going to have some short-term fantasy value, but as we look forward for his value, I just don't really see it for him. He's going to be a guy that hovers around that 17 to 20 minutes per night mark. He's not a Mirza Teletovic, a red-hot three-point shooter. He's not doing much defensively. He's not bringing you defensive numbers. He's not a playmaker. He's not creating his own shot. He's not getting others involved. He's just an okay-ish three-point shooting big man who helps out occasionally defensively, but really not as a great option, and a guy who is probably much older than what you anticipate, just given the lateness of which he entered the league. He was drafted back in 2010, and he didn't come across until the 2015-16 NBA season. Nothing about what he does really makes you stand up and go, this is awesome. Yeah, per 36 for the season, 13-7 with 2 triples and 1.3 steals. There are many, many players who are doing that already in like under 30 minutes. It's not a big, big number for him. What makes you go, oh shit, the potential's there, the minutes are there, let's see how it all translates. I think he gets overrated by many people in terms of what his upside actually can be. I just don't see it for him in the NBA. I think that his defensive liabilities, his lack of creation and playmaking will really impact his playing time as we move forward. If he has a few good games here, maybe you can acquire an asset in a dynasty type format for a guy like Bielitsa. And again, he can have some short-term value here, but we've seen him have little runs of short-term value in the past, and then it fizzles out pretty quickly. And I imagine that we'll see some real up and down performances from Nemanja this time around. Let's go into these games for Monday, the start of a new week. There are 10 of them for us to talk about. The first one we're going to talk about, the Detroit Pistons. They are heading to Toronto to take on the Toronto Raptors. That's the name of that team in Toronto. Of course it is. The Raptors are favored by 11 and the total is 218. So we know that the Raptors have a real habit of getting these blowouts going and getting their bench unit playing the entirety of the fourth quarter. So that's going to make it tough on guys like DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, but it's going to boost the upside of players like Freddie VanVleet, DeLon Wright, perhaps CJ Miles or Jakob Poeltl. So bear that in mind when having a look at your lineups. At point guard, as I said, VanVleet is at $5,000. He's got comfortably the upside to go for 40 in a matchup where the Pistons are coming off a back-to-back. They're getting smacked. They're on the road. There's a real chance that he could play 27 or 28 minutes here, VanVleet, and that's got the upside to comfortably beat that 25-point mark. The problem is if the game gets kept close, he plays 22 minutes, and he's a struggle to get to that value. So that's why I like him for tournaments, but I have no interest in him in cash games. Ish Smith's at $6,000. He's been playing quite well lately. Point guard defense, put DeLon Wright on him, put Kyle Lowry on him. That could be a real issue for Ish. He's been shooting well recently as well, and we know that can go away at any point, so not really keen there. While Kyle Lowry at $8,300 seems like a really poor investment with a real blowout opportunity. As for Wright, DeLon Wright at $4,400, no interest. At shooting guard, DeRozan's at $8,200. I don't like this one for DeRozan for the same reasons I don't like it for Lowry. I feel a little bit better with DeMar than I do with Kyle, who can fill it up in shorter amounts of time, but I still don't think that it's a strong option. While Luke Kennard, is he going to play? That is the big question. Who knows what the hell Van Gundy's going to do half the time. CJ Miles is at $3,600 in that VanVleet category where you could throw him into a tournament. I don't love it, but there is something there. While Reggie Bullock at $4,500 is more of a tournament guy than anything. Stan Johnson, Jim Ennis, the Jedi OG Ananobi.
Hello there.
They're not guys who I think are going to have too much of a DFS impact. Serge Ibaka at $5,600, actually averaging 30 points over his last 5, which is comfortable value at that salary. we do run the risk of the blowout of him playing 25 minutes and Pascal Siakam and his 19% three-point shot playing 24 minutes and really impacting what Serge can do. So while the current form for Ibaka has been fine, not sure I want to really rely upon him. While Blake Griffin at 8,000, that salary's come down quite a lot because his players come down. He's averaging only 30 points over the last five, Blake, but you can comfortably have him as a tournament option here. Really got the ability to go for 50. In fact, his last three games against Toronto, he's averaged 43. So it's a good opportunity despite his recent struggles. At center, Jonas Valanciunas, 6,800. I think that's probably too high for Valanciunas, to be honest. The Andre Drummond matchup, not sure I love it. Valanciunas can hold his own, but I think that that is just a little bit too high. As for Drummond at 9,900, he does pretty well against Toronto himself. Absolutely no qualms with using Drummo here and giving him or using that $10,000 on a center. There are other centers out there who I'd rather use. Tone Davis on certain sites is going to be center eligible. I think he's power forward on FanDuel. You can go with guys like Karl Anthony Towns as well, which I'd probably prefer over Andre Drummond. Let's have a look. Now let's swing it over to DraftKings and see how things look over there. Drummond at 9.2 is a super strong play on DraftKings. And Valanciunas at 6,000, way more on board with that. So I like both of those guys as cash plays on DraftKings. Freddie VanVleet at 4,400 for the same reasons I spoke about with FanDuel. And Griffin, way less interesting on DraftKings. He's at 8,500 as opposed to the 8,000 on FanDuel. Lowry in an interesting spot, but if I'm using him, it's just tournaments at 7,300 just because of those blowout reasons that I stated a little bit earlier. All right, let's head on to the next game. We're going to be talking about the Chicago Bulls. They are taking on the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets are favored by three. Yes, the Nets are favored by three, and the total is 217.5 points. This is the first half of a back-to-back for the Bulls. So Zach LaVine is going to sit out one of these games. We don't know which one, so there is a possibility he sits out this one. Does that mean that Justin Holiday gets a one-game reprieve and is back into the rotation? Do they bring in Antonio Blakeney? Or does it just mean we get 35 minutes of Denzel the Hammer Valentine? I think that they might be loath to get Holiday back in, and they'll run with Blakeney. They'll run with more of Holiday. They'll run with more of Nwaba there as well. The other option for Chicago, or the other guy we need to pay attention to for Chicago, is Paul Zipser, who is dealing with left foot pain. If he is out, it means more minutes in that front court for guys like Punch Bob and for Chris Felizio. Let's talk about the rest of this game. From a point guard's point of view, Spencer Dinwiddie, 7,100. Not only is he going against his former team, can't believe the Bulls ever cut him, but he is going against an absolutely sensational matchup for point guard. So I am all about Spencer Dinwiddie here. Chrissy Dunn's at 6,500. The DFS mantra, point guards and centers against the Nets, and Chris Dunn falls into that. He had 30 in 29 minutes in his last game. At 6,500, he's got 45, 50-point upside here, so I'm all about using Chrissy Dunn. Well, good old Campaign, my boy Campaign. He's looking all right, isn't he? Let's see how stupid I look for saying that after today's game, but his first two games for the... Or, what's it, Monday's game, because I don't know what day you're listening. First two games for the Bulls, Campaign has played well. Simple as that, he's played well. He's averaging 22 points so far this season in his two games. And at 4,100, that's not far off where he needs to be. If you really want to set yourself apart in a tournament and no one else is going to roster him, maybe Campaign can get a weird 25 minutes, especially if LaVine is out and they run Payne and Dunn lineups together. He could get 35 points. That's not an outrageous statement, and many of you will be scoffing at Josh. Unless you're awarding points for dancing, Campaign's never getting near 35. But let's just wait and see on that. I think he is an absolutely a tournament of low end, maybe throw shit against the wall type of guy. But don't be surprised. Just don't be surprised, especially if Zachy LaVine is out, that my boy Cam comes through. D'Angelo Russell at 7,200. They have just gone, well, cool, he's starting. Let's just go through the roof with his salary. I would much rather have Dinwiddie at $100 less, but Russell's playing well, averaging 30.5 over the last three games, newly starting. We'll see whether that remains with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Caris LeVert back for Monday's game, but he's got some opportunity there. I'd be more likely to look at him as a tournament player. LaVine at 7,600, if he plays, all about that, but we don't know. At this point, LeVert not interested. At small forward, the Blue Swimmer, 5,300 for Alan Crabb. Amazingly, the lowest score for Crabby over the last five games is 22 points, and given his inconsistency, that's amazing. The matchup's great for Crabbe. I still don't feel like I can say lock him in at cash, especially on a 10-game slate for Crabbe. Well, Damari Carroll at 5,600. I think it's a good spot here for Carroll. Actually, depending on what happens with the lineup, do they start Carroll at power forward again? Does Hollis Jefferson step back in and start? Does Carroll move to the three? Then there's a squeeze for minutes with Crabbe and Russell and Dinwiddie, and that could be an issue. But if they decide they're going to ease Rondé back and play him limited minutes and take Dante Cunningham out of the rotation, fingers crossed, then Carroll can have some value, mainly because of the matchup, but there are a lot of variables there. David Nwaba is at $5,000, and we can talk about how well Nwaba's played all we want, but he still only had 23 points in that last game. And at $5,000, I think there's a real value cap on what he can do, and I'm not a massive fan, especially not for cash. Jumpin' Joe Harris, Dante Cunningham, Zipsa, no. Power forward Lauri Markkanen has just been bad the last couple of games, struggling to score. He's at 6,100, therefore I am in. I love the bigs matching up against the Nets. Ownership should be much lower if people are just going based on what he's done his last two games. The minutes have still been there for him. 6,100. He can't hit a shot for shit, but this is an opportunity for him to go out and have a real monster. So I'm big on him. While PunchBob Shiploke's at 7,100. I hate that salary for Portis. But if things roll his way, then he's a 50-pointer. If he shows his defensive, ineptitude, indifference, then it's going to be hard for him to play enough minutes to get to that. But he's got that upside to beat that number, which is totally what you're after. Rondé's at 6,300, nothing to do with that. Well, Quincy Acey and Noah Vonleh, no way. At center, Chris Felizio, 3,900. Had an okay game in the last one, 23 points in 31 minutes. I know I say play centers against the Nets, but man, you're really stretching it with Felizio. I think you can use him in a tournament. That salary's low enough. The 26-point upside perhaps might make it worthwhile, but shit, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. Well, Jarrett Allen at 5,400. Hey, him matching up against Felizio, he's got a real chance to drop a 30 or drop a 35-point game, so I don't mind using Jarrett Allen here, but the Atkinson's use of him has been a source of frustration. Still played 26 minutes in the last game and had 28 points, but there is still a cloud hanging over the amount of playing time he is going to get. On DraftKings, I like PunchBob at 63. I like D'Angelo at 63. That's a much more reasonable price for Russell. Whereas on the other hand, Spencer Dinwiddie is probably a little bit overpriced at 7,000. And the only reason I'd consider Dinwiddie on DraftKings is because of the opposition. It's because we're playing the Bulls as the Nets here. So there's an opportunity. But otherwise, that salary sort of takes that value away. Chrissy Dunn at 7,000, a little bit too high again. But the Nets opposition does make it interesting. Levine at 76 also has some appeal there. Nwaba at 49, not bad. Felizio at 36, GPP type of a guy. Well, I do like Jarrett Allen quite a bit at 4,900. And I love Lowry at 5,500. Markkanen at that price, again, probably not for cash, but for tournaments, there is definitely something happening there with Lowry Markkanen. Let's go to the next game. We're going to talk Grizzlies. We're going to talk Celtics. Marc Gasol sat out the last game for Memphis on a back-to-back. He will be back. He will be playing in this one. But Tyreek Evans, Chandler Parsons, and Wayne Seldon Jr. have already been ruled out. So there's opportunities for other players here for the Grizzlies to put up some numbers. The last game they started with Jermichael Green, Jarrell Martin at the 3 and the 4, which is as weird a combination as you can get. But that's what they're doing, throwing out these bullshit-type lineups. So there's going to be some interest there in those guys. For the Celtics, Aaron Baines missed the last game. So Vanilla Tice, he got the starting nod there. And that's a possibility here again. Or we also could see Marcus Morris starting at power forward. But with Marcus Sol at center, I think they'll probably want to throw a bigger body out there rather than try and sacrifice Al Horford out of position. At point guard, Kyrie Irving's at 8,500. Irving almost had a triple-double in the last game, put up 58 points. That's obviously a really nice performance. The slower-paced Grizzlies games aren't always conducive to good fantasy numbers. Blowout risk is a problem here for Kyrie, and at that elevated price, he's probably going to be a fade. Andy Harrison with no Tyreek Evans at 5,600. I think you should feel pretty confident about it. He dropped 29 in the last game without Tyreek in only 28 minutes, and we've seen him in Evans's absences earlier this season that he was able to put up some good numbers, and it just continually feels weird that I'm saying Andrew Harrison has fantasy value. but he does. Terry Rozier's at 4,600. You can comfortably fade him, I feel, while minimum salary Mario Chalmers. Kobe Simmons played more than him last game, and both those guys are going to cut into each other's playing time. Jaylen Brown's at 56, just really not doing anything that's high upside at the moment. He's also got a low floor, so they're the two things that you don't want anything to do with a lot of the time, while Marcus Smart at 51 has been fantastic since returning. Dropped 28 in 28 minutes in that last game. A good matchup for Marcus Smart, and 5,100, I don't think that's an exorbitantly high price, and I think you should have a level of confidence in Smart in getting to that 25 and pushing through to 30, 32. More of a tournament guy than a cash guy, but I don't think that using him in cash would be an incorrect decision. Mike Henry and Ben McLemore will play a little bit, but they won't do enough to be much use. Jason Tatum, he is only 19. He is at 5,500. He dropped 43 the last time he played Memphis, but it's been a long time since we've had big games like that from Tatum, although he did have 36 in his last game, averaging only 23 over the last five. If I'm going to use him, it's going to be tournaments. Well, Dylan Brooksy Brooks at 4,500 just is a low-value proposition. At power forward, Jermichael Green at 4,700. Last game, no Gasol, 35 minutes. 22 points. He is just not a good fantasy producer. This is a negative matchup, so I'm not interested in Jermichael Green really here at all. I would much rather take Jarrell Martin at 4,100, assuming they go with him starting. Now, he was shit in the last game too, only had 13 points. But I feel better about Jarrell Martin because I'm saving $600, but neither of them are going to be high priority cash type of players. As for Vanilla Tice at 3,700, if he starts, you'd throw him into a tournament perhaps. Well, Marcus Morris at 45. If he starts at 4,500, I think you can use Marcus Morris in cash. At center, Deontay Davis, 23 points, 23 minutes in the last game, but there was no Marcus Gasol. Marc Gasol is going to come back, and while he's probably going to be limited and probably play around 30 minutes a night, that means you're getting 18 out of Davis. Now, Davis can get you 25 points in 18 minutes. We've seen it from him a few times this season, but I still don't think that this is a great opportunity to use him. As for Gasol at 6,900, that's getting interesting. He averages 50 against the Celtics the last three times out. There is a question over the minutes, but at 6,900, or as you would say, 6,900.
Giggity!
I think you can look at Gasol. I think you can consider him a definite tournament option. And I'd even go as far as to say that there might be some use for him in cash, but that's a risky one. Al Horford at 68, I do like that because of that price point. I like Horford here in this matchup. Let's go on to DraftKings now. Not a lot really standing out, to be honest. Jermichael Green at 47, perhaps, but I don't like it. Al Horford at 6,400 has got some upside there. Kyrie's too expensive at 87. The 7,100 on Marc Gasol is probably a little bit too high. Andy Harrison's the one that stands out at 5,100, as does Marcus Smart at 4,800. But overall on DraftKings, just not a very exciting matchup and definitely not one that you're looking to stack on either of those two main sites. Let's go to the next game. It's the Golden State Warriors. It's the New York Knicks. Talk about that Detroit and Toronto match having blowout potential. This has got blowout written all over it. The Warriors are favored by 12. The total is 230 points. Jordy Bell is listed as questionable, but it appears like he is going to be closer to probable. So expect Jordan Bell to play, meaning Kevon Looney will be out of the rotation. Now, does Bell come back and start immediately? I would have to say no to that. I think JaVale McGee will start again. But I can honestly, and I've said it plenty of times, over the last 4 or 5 days. Once that move was made to go away from Zaza Pachulia to JaVale McGee as the starting center, that opens up the door for Bell to get quite a few starts here down the stretch. So keep an eye on him. I wouldn't be using him DFS-wise here, though. At point guard, Manny Moutier is at 4,500. Actually, I like that for Moutier. I know he shot his shit, but he still had 26 points in the last game in 25 minutes, and I think there is comfortable cash value there. Whereas Steph loves playing the Knicks. He's at 9,600. The blowout's a risk, but if I said to you that Steph Curry dropped 45 real-life points in three quarters, you wouldn't say that's crazy, and that he's got a real ability to do that in this matchup and going against the Knicks where point guards feast, especially Curry in Madison Square Garden, a great opportunity. So I do like Steph here. Frankie Ntilikina at 37, no. Trey Burke's up to 4,900. I've said this plenty of times as well in some of my written stuff or tweets. The last two games, Trey Burke has shot over 50% from the field with a usage of over 30%. Those two things in concert will not continue to happen for Burke. Maybe he has a usage of over 30%. It seems high for a guy who's not a good shooter. But I know that he won't be able to maintain plus 50 and plus 30 together. at 4,900, that's taking a little bit of the value off the top of Trey Burke. I know on one of the Aussie sites, he's still like a minimum salary player, but I don't really see him as being this awesome option at 4,900. Shooting guards, Clay Thompson's at 6,500. He is he's a tough one to rely upon. The matchup is really, really good for Clay, but he has struggled to return that value majority of the time this season. In fact, averaging under 23 points in his last five games, nowhere near where you want it to be at that sort of a salary. But one of the best shooting guard matchups in the NBA is the Knicks, so there is an opportunity for Clay. I just don't feel like taking that risk. Timmy Hardaway is at 6,300. He seems to be the only guy who's not getting his minutes reduced at all. That price is fine. His unreliability leans him towards tournaments more. Courtney Lee, no chance at all. At small forward, KD, 10,200. Another guy who does feast on the Knicks. No problem using him, but remember that blowout risk. But again, like Steph, he could easily have 50 fantasy points in just three quarters of action, making him a useful option. Mick Beasley's at 6,000. His minutes have dropped the last couple of games. I don't know if that's a long-term thing. I don't know if it's a permanent thing, but I'm not willing to take that risk just yet. Lance Thomas, Andre Iguodala, Troy Williams, and Omri Caspi. Don't write off Troy Williams. He had 22 points in 12 minutes in the last game, which is obviously an extraordinarily high rate and unlikely for him to be able to continue that. But they're giving him some minutes, and it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. Probably not the best matchup for Troy, but it's an interesting guy to take a look at maybe if you want to really go off the board. At power forward, Draymond Green is at 8,100. I think I'd fade him here. Dave West at 4,000. No. Jordy Bell, minimum salary. Hey, if you want to go wild, why not? I probably would leave him out, though. At center, Enes Kanter at 6,700. As a member of the Thunder, he really struggled against the Warriors, but his last three matchups, he'd played 27 minutes against Golden State and averaged 31 points in those games. That's fine. But 31 points is also not worth 6,700. So I don't think that Enes Kanter is a worthy option here. Zaza, JaVale, no. Koch at 4,400. Kyle O'Quinn. He is a guy to have a look at, but more of a tournament guy. But even then, I don't think it's the strongest option out there. Let's have a look at the next, on DraftKings, go over there. I like O'Quinn more on DraftKings at 3,900. Steph is at 10.6, and that takes a lot of the upside away from Steph, while KD at 10.5. Again, with the smaller salary on DraftKings, the percentage that those guys are taking up is a little bit higher, and the blowout risk tends to steer me a little bit away there. Moutier at 4,800 and Trey Burke at 46. There's a little bit of value there in those guys. I'd use Moutier more for cash and Burke more for tournaments, but there is still something there, but not a great-looking game over on DraftKings. Let's move on to the next game now. We're going to talk about the Lakers and the Hawks. Lonzo will be back in this one. He missed the last game as a back-to-back. The Lakers are favored by two on the road, and the total is 223.5. Ersan Ilyasova still hasn't been bought out by the Hawks, but it's coming, so he won't be playing. DeAndre Bembry also listed as doubtful, and Malcolm Delaney is out. Let's talk point guards. Isaiah Taylor, 3,700. He had 30 points in the last game. He has played really well, taking all of those Delaney minutes, with DeAndre Bembry also doubtful. I actually, amazingly, like a bloke called Isaiah Taylor here to go out there. And is there a chance he outproduces the other IT, Isaiah Thomas? That's not stupid. Definitely value for money-wise. I would rather have Isaiah Taylor than Isaiah Thomas. And that is a bananas sentence to be saying. Dennis Schroeder's at $7,000. His numbers have not been great of late. There is a risk with him. It's a great matchup, but do they keep him at 27, 28 minutes instead of 34? I think that's a distinct possibility, so I would leave Dennis for the tournaments. Tyler Dorsey at 37. Isaiah Thomas at 55. Again, just not playing enough minutes in LA. There's a good opportunity here for him, of course, in a really good matchup, but I'd really only feel comfortable using him in a tournament, whereas Lonzo at 6,500, coming off the injury, I just don't know what the minutes are going to be like for Ball, so I'd end up fading him there. At shooting guard, Bazemore's at 5,900. Again, the minutes, 2-3 minutes fewer, really hard for him to get to that 30-point barrier that he needs to get to. Joshie the Hitman Hart at 4,800. With Lonzo back, does he get enough minutes? He had 27 points in 31 minutes in the last game, which is nice, and it's value at 4,800, but 31 minutes, is it probably pushing it a little bit too far? I think it probably is. While Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, he had 45. And in fact, this bloke is averaging 38 over his last five games. But that $6,500 price tag, I want nothing to do with that. We know the streakiness that is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. We're going to have a full backcourt with Thomas, Ball, and Hart there as well. Really hard to rely upon that, I believe. The artist formerly known as Torian Prince is at 4,800. He had 28 in 27 minutes in his last outing. And I think that there is 30-point upside here. That's why I like him for tournaments. Brandon Ingram at 7,000. Take him off the ball, and I think that loses a bit of his value. And with Lonzo back, I'm not super keen on it. But his floor's been really good. 27-point minimum over his last five. That's a strong, strong floor. He's averaging 35 over the last three games. I probably would end up fading him here just because of the less time playing on the ball, but he has been impressive. Our power forward, the Baptist, John Collins, is at 5,800. He had 26 in 30 minutes in the last game, starting in place of Ersan Ilyasova, and I imagine that he will start this game, and from now until the rest of the season, he will be a starter. Does he have 37-point upside? Of course he does. Should he get to 30 points here? Yeah, he should. Do I trust Mike Budenholzer to play him or him to not get in foul trouble? Nah, not quite, not yet. If it was at 5,200, I'd be smashing it in cash all the time. At 58, it's probably more of a tournament situation, but you could use it in cash, and I don't think that there would be any incorrect decision there. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma at 5,500, you can take that. His minutes, his production have been way down, averaging just 16 points in 22 minutes over the last three games. At center, Mike Muscala at 4,000. He got extra minutes with Dwayne Dedman benched in that last game, but Dedman prior to that had played pretty well. He's at 5,600. I don't think we can really rely upon either of those guys, nor can we rely upon Brook Lopez, who's at $5,000. And yes, Brook had 28 in 24 minutes the last time the Lakers played, and he historically has played very well against Atlanta. But I just don't know which direction the minutes are going to go. Julius Randle's at 7,700, crushed the Mavericks as he always does. He's averaging over 40 in his last five games. I feel pretty good about Randle here, although that price does make it tough, but he is just constantly churning out 40-point games. His minutes don't appear to be going anywhere, and I feel like he has got a fairly safe floor here, even if the upside at that price might not be quite as good as what you would hope. On DraftKings, Schroeder at 6,800, I'm way more on board with that, and Johnny Collins, the Baptist, at 58 has value. Randall at 78 is probably pushing it just a little bit too far there. Ingram at 66 I can use. Bazemore at 55, I also think there's something there. I don't like Prince, I don't like Ball, and I don't like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. While the hitman, Joshy Hart, at 4,300, I would take a flyer on that. He's got 30-point upside, and that makes him an interesting tournament guy, less so on FanDuel, though. We'll go on to the next game now. We have got the Orlando Magic taking on the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Serge Ibaka Victor Oladipo Bowl. The Thunder are favored by 10.5, and the total is 220.5 points here. John Isaac, who's been out for forever, has played for the G League team for the Magic, the Lakeland Magic. And he is questionable for this one. If he does return, it's going to impact a little bit of Mario Hezonja's playing time, probably a little bit of John Simmons, and definitely Kem Birch and maybe Bismack Biyombo as well, but not going to be a huge impact sort of a player. Russell Westbrook's at $12,000. He absolutely eviscerates the Magic when he plays them. He averages 78 in the last three times he has played the Magic. No problem with using Russ here at all. One of the best point guard matchups in the NBA. Fatface Ray Felton's at 3,600. DJ Augustine's at 53. And Shelvin Mack's at 42. And I wouldn't want to use any of those point guards. Evan Fournier's at 6,400 as a shooting guard. That's just too high for Fournier. I like what he can do. He's a 27, 28 sort of point guy, but 6,400, it just doesn't get it done. I don't like the upside for him. I just think it's too high, and I think that that's a strong fade. Josh Eustace has been starting at shooting guard for the Thunder. Alex Abrines played more minutes than him, but I feel pretty good about saying you don't want anything to do with either of them. Paulie George at 8,700, a really nice matchup for Georgie, but that price puts it into more tournament areas. He was piss poor against the Warriors across the weekend, putting up just 20 points in that one. So he could have 50, he could have 20, probably not 20 again, he could have 50, he could have 30. Maybe that's a better way to phrase it. So that's a nice tournament option. Johnny Simmons, no. Mario Hezonja at 6,000. He's getting point guard minutes. He's getting power forward minutes. He had 29 points in 25 minutes in that last game with Gordon and Vucevic both back at their full volume of playing time. So that's encouraging. But at 6,000, I just feel you're really putting a cap on the upside value there. And I think there are going to be better options around. Hustis and Wezewundo, no way. At power forward, Mallow's at 5,700. It's a nice price for Carmelo Anthony. He's not doing a huge amount, but he gets to 30 and the value's beaten. So I think that there's a real chance that he can do that here. While Jeremy Grant at 3,900, yeah, you can do better. As Gordon, 7,900, back in business in the last game, Azza. He had 41 points in 31 minutes. I think he's a good chance to get another 40 here. But is he good enough on a 10-game slate to use as your power forward spending that much cash? I don't really think so. At why is Bismack Biyombo listed as a power forward? That is baffling. At center, Steven Adams is at 7,600. A really good matchup spot here for Adams. He's been playing very, very well, but I just hate the price. I hate spending 7,600 on him. That is a fade for me. Well, Nick Vucevic at 7,900. It's a bad matchup for Vuce. Going against Adams, he's more of a $6,000 player than an $8,000 player in this matchup. So I think that's a fairly strong fade. On DraftKings, a lot of value here. I like As Gordon at 72. I like Stevie Adams at 71. Westbrook at 11.8. And Fournier, that's the price. He's at 5,500 on DraftKings. And that's where you go, you know what? I feel good that Fournier is going to get me 26 or 27. Bang on where he needs to be. Not this elevated price that he comes in on at FanDuel. Vooch at 75 is still probably a little bit high. While Paul George at 9,000, that's a fairly strong fade scenario for me with him on DraftKings. Let's go on to the next game now. We've got the Phoenix Suns and the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pelicans on a back-to-back. They are favored by 7. The total is 231 points here. Tyson Chandler is doubtful for Phoenix, so we're going to get more Alex Len, a bit more Dragan Bender there also. At point guard, Rajon Rondo at $6,000. I don't know. I don't know what Rondo we're going to get. We're going to get 40-point Rondo. We're going to get 12-point Rondo. It's a great tournament option. It's a fantastic matchup for him as he goes up against Alfred Payton and the Suns. But which one do we get? Do we get the one that gets benched and does jack shit? Or do we get the one that runs things and puts up, you know, really good numbers and still sucks at defense? At 6,000, he is a good tournament option, but that's it. As for Payton, 7,500, putting up good numbers. But I just feel that's too expensive for Payton. Shooting guards. Oh, Ian Clark, minimum salary. Yeah, probably not. Shooting guards, Jrue Holiday, 8,500, just continues to crank out numbers. He had 60 today. He's averaging over 50 in his last five games. That price is getting pretty expensive, but this matchup is as tasty as it gets. So I don't hate using Jrue here, even in cash. Well, Devin Booker's up at 8,400. That's a very big price for Booker. He's been really good, clearly. But would I rather spend the extra 100 and take Jrue Holiday? I probably would. Small forwards, Etuan Moore, no. Joshy Jackson, 4,600, just been poor lately, real bad last game for Jackson, and seeing his minutes drop down with guys like even Shaq Harrison, yes, that's a real guy as well, eating into his playing time, 4,600 for Joshy, but given how far his salary has dropped, there is some upside there in Joshy Jackson. TJ Warren's at 6,500, put up some decent gains, I just don't think there's much value in that price. Nick Mirotic at 7,800, not really hampered all that much coming off the bench, had 36 points in 37 minutes in today's game, Mirotic. I just don't really see that as being an excellent use of your available cap. Well, Marquise Chris at 38 and Dragan Bender at 37, I feel pretty strongly about fading both of those guys. At center, Alex Len's at 5,200. Yes, it's a tough game going up against the Pelicans. Yes, Len can get into foul trouble, but he has been very, very strong lately. And at 5,200, that's not a high price. I feel pretty good about using Len. Emeka Okafor at 3,600, probably not going to do much damage there. While Tone Davis, he's a center on FanDuel. They changed him. 12,500 for Tone. Great matchup. Is that price too much? No. He can very easily get 65, can very easily get 70. He is averaging, in his last five games, averaging 76 points. And that includes only having 53 today. And I say only 53, and it sounds so stupid coming out of my mouth, but that's how good that Tone Davis has been. on DraftKings. Davis at 11.7 is a no-brainer, and Nick Mirotic at 6,500. I think that is through the roof type of value. Holiday over Booker over there as well, 81 versus 83. So not only is he a better option, but he's a cheaper player too, so I'd much rather take Drew with a much better matchup there also. Etuan Moore at 4,300, maybe, but probably not. While Rondo at 58, still the same sort of confounding player, even though he is $200 cheaper. Lord Alfred Payton is priced higher on DraftKings, so that's, again, further turning me off using him just at that elevated $7,700 salary. The Pacers and the Mavericks. The Pacers are favored by 2.5, and the total is 210 points here. We could be seeing the return of Nerlens Noel anytime there, but it's not going to have too much of an impact on DFS. Still no Dallas Collison, so Corey Joseph will get another start at point guard. He's at 5,200. He had 36 points in his last game, really starting to put together some okay performances, and going against the Mavs is a nice way for point guards to get their numbers up. So I like Joseph as a tournament guy. I don't trust his floor, though. JJ Barea at 58, really thriving in this starting role alongside Dennis Smith, had 37 average over the last three at 5,800. I think that's not a bad guy to use here. Well, Smith, Dennis Smith Jr. at 6,000 has been all over the place. It's a big salary drop. It's a tough matchup with Joseph and Stevenson and Oladipo and all those guys switching onto him. But I think at 6,000, he should be in your GPP pool. Yogi Ferrell also getting some extra minutes. He's at 4,000. I just don't really see the upside there with him. At shooting guard, Oladipo's at 10,000. I feel good about that. I think he gets 50. A real strong cash play here. Wes Matthews at 5,000. Struggling. I don't want anything to do with him at the moment. At small forward, the pencil Harrison Barnes, 5,800. That, you should look at Barnes and go under 6,000. That should get me excited. It just doesn't. He's averaging under 26 points over his last five games, Barnes is, and just, I don't know, he just isn't doing anything at all. He's such a low upside player that you can do better in most cases. Lance Stevenson, little dog Glenn Robinson, Bojan Bogdanovic, Doug McDermott, very little interest in any of those players. At power forward, Domantas Sabonis at 5,900. He had 40 points in the last game in 30 minutes. That has caused FanDuel to rise his salary by $1,000, and therefore I don't want anything to do with that. Dirk at 5,600, playing well. Averaging 33 over his last five is Dirk. I don't feel good about it because I just feel like there's always going to be a reduction in minutes at some point. There'll be a random game where his minutes go down, but it hasn't really been the case. So I think he is a tournament type option. Just don't feel strongly about him in cash. Dwight Powell at 57, that's probably pushing a little bit too high up, while Thaddeus Young at 68 has been crushing it at the moment. And he does generally play okay against Dallas. 37 average over his last three games in general is pretty good, but I don't think this is the best way to use him at that elevated price. Miles Turner at 6,500, there's no way you can use him in cash, but he is another guy who does well against Dallas. I'd be all about throwing him into a tournament, while Salah Mejri and Nerlens Noel, I don't think we need to worry too much about those guys. On DraftKings, love Oladipo, 8,900. That is stupendous. That is just great, great value for Vic. You should be looking at that really, really strongly. But otherwise in this game, not a huge amount that stands out. Barea's at 59, so that's probably a little bit too high. The Pencil and Dennis Smith are both priced higher on DraftKings than they are on FanDuel. Miles Turner in the same boat. Very little else stands out as value on DraftKings, apart from that great price on Victor Oladipo. Let's go on now to our second last game of the day. It's the Houston Rockets and the Utah Jazz. The Rockets coming off the back-to-back. They beat the Nuggets today. At point guard, we're looking at Ravishing Rick Rubio, who's at 6,800, probably just a little bit too high. Negative matchup against Chris Paul, easing his way back in. So I'd fade that. And as for Paul at 8,400, well, the Jazz, the slower tempo, the back-to-back, the Rubio, I don't think I'd want to use Chris Paul at 8,400 either. Shooting guard, Eric Gordon's at 4,500. I don't know if he's going to play. I don't want to use him regardless. Well, Jim Harden at 11-1. All about Jim at 11-1. He has been crushing it. We know that. Putting up huge, huge games night after night. Well, the Don Mitchell at 8,000. Yeah, he's been good. We know that. I just feel that 8,000 is probably pushing it a little bit too far. I could consider using him in a GPP setting, but I think in cash that might be just a little bit too far for me. Hal Neto has been ruled out for the Jazz as well. At small forward, Royce O'Neal's at 3,800. Neto's absence pushes Burks and a little bit more of Mitchell to point guard, opening up some wing minutes for O'Neal. He's at 3,800, more of a tournament sort of a guy than anything. but even then, not really high value. While Jingle and Joe's at $6,700, I reckon I'll leave Ingles alone. That price just seems a little bit too high. Trevor Ariza at $4,900, he looked okay today. I feel okay about using him at $4,900, even if it's in cash. At power forward, Derek Favors at $5,800. I think there's low upside there in Favors, and also a little bit risk. So I'd steer clear. Well, Jay Crowder at 43 has gone back to being a little bit of a sucky Jay Crowder, averaging 20 points over the last five, which is not cutting it at 4,300. Ryan Anderson, Luke Marmute, Jonas Jerebko, no. At center, Rudy Gobert at 7,900. Gobert has been playing very well. Last game a little bit poor, only 25 points, but I'm okay with getting Gobert here and looking for 40. Well, Clint Capella at 7,700. Give me Gobert over Capella any day, even though it is an extra $200. Nene will be back after sitting out today's game as well for the Rockets. Not that that's having a big DFS impact. Love Gobert on DraftKings, 7,200. Capella at 69, I would use him at that price too. Ingles at 6,000, I'm more into that on DraftKings. Not interested in him on FanDuel, but on DraftKings I am. While Ravishing Rick is down to 5,600. Didn't like the salary that he was priced at FanDuel, but at that sort of price, I think you have to take a look at Rubio in a tournament setting with that 40-point upside there for Ravishing Rick. Of course, Jim Harden's still in play at 11-1. We like him, and I'd be fading Chris Paul. And the Don at 7,900's a toss-up one, but definitely not a strong option, I don't think, given the salary. The last game of the day is the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're taking on the Sacramento Kings. We know that Jim Butler is out. Point guard Jeff Teague is at 7,500. He had 51 in that first game without Butler. And I feel pretty good he's going to at least get me 30. So I think he's a pretty decent cash option. De'Aaron Fox is at 5,700. More tournaments than anything. While Tyus Jones and Frank Mason, a little bit hard to rely upon them. At shooting guard, Budrick Hield's at 4,800. Seen the minutes rise, 29 points in 28 minutes average over the last three games. So I'm definitely fine with using him in cash. Jamal Crawford at 4,900 is a bit of a tournament upside guy who's going to see his usage and playing time increase in Butler's absence. While Andrew Wiggins at 6,900. If it wasn't for the fact that they'd bumped his salary, I'd be looking at him in cash. For now, I'm just doing tournaments. Bogdan Bogdanovic at 54. I feel good about that in cash as well. He's coming off a 38-pointer in the Kings' last game. At small forward, Bielitsa is up to 5,600, so that takes him well out of my cash consideration. Maybe I'd put him as a tournament guy. That'd be about it. That's just a whopping price hike. Well, Justin Jackson at 4,000, he had 1 point in 14 minutes in the last game, so I think you could feel pretty good about fading him. Gorgui Dieng at 3,600, not for me. Labissiere at 54. Tournament, but not really interested there. Well, Taj Gibson's at 6,500 for a reason. He's playing really well, but I don't love that salary for Gibson. At Zach Randolph also, sorry, 6,800, way too high. At center, all about Karl Anthony Towns here, $10,000, great matchup. This should be 55, it should be 60, 65 is what we're aiming for here for Towns. So I really do like this price, whereas Cauley Stein at 6,900, a tough matchup. Centers have struggled against the Wolves of late. One of the toughest center matchups, and you can shit on Towns' defense all you want, but in terms of fantasy, centers have really struggled against Minnesota of late. 6,900 for Cauley Stein. I have no ability to trust what playing time Dave Joerger will give him, so therefore it's a pretty decent fade for me. On DraftKings, Townsie at 99, we love. Bielitsa at 47 in a much stronger spot than on FanDuel, and Jamal Crawford at 38. I'm all about Crawford at that sort of a price tag. Cauley Stein's probably still a little bit too high, but I do like Taj at 6,200. That's a more reasonable price, and that's a more usable price. Well, Jeff Teague at 7,400.
My name is Jeff.
I think that is a usable scenario for Big Jeffy. Let's now go and have a look at the other remaining DFS sites, a quick run through them. On Yahoo for tournaments, I like D'Angelo, I like The Baptist, John Collins, Dwighty Powell, Jarrett Allen, Taurean Prince, Etuan Moore, DJ Augustine, Isaiah Taylor, Chris Felizio, Yogi Ferrell, and Justin Jackson as tournament guys. For cash and tournaments, Jay Crowder, Kylo Quinn, Moutier, Trey Burke, Jamal Crawford, Van Vliet, Budrick Hield, Scalabissiere, Nemanja Bjelica, JJ Barea, Rudy Gobert, Kevin Durant, Karl Anthony Towns, Oladipo, Tone Davis, and Russell Westbrook, along with Jim Harden. On Moneyball for tournaments, you've got Oladipo, Mirotic, Punch Bob, John Collins, Andy Wiggins, Taurean Prince, Trevor Ariza, Mike Muscala, Deontay Davis, and Chris Felizio. for cash, Isaiah Taylor, Trey Burke, Jamal Crawford, Alex Len, Budrick Hield, Bialica, Berea, Taj Gibson, Jeff Teague, D'Angelo Russell, Steve Adams, DeMar DeRozan, Kyrie Irving, Rudy Gobert, Karl Anthony Towns, James Harden, Anthony Davis, and Russell Westbrook. And on draft stars for tournaments, Oladipo, D'Angelo Russell, Zachy LaVine, if he plays, Jermichael Green, Corey Joseph, De'Aaron Fox, Taurean Prince, Deontay Davis, Chris Felizio, Emeka Okafor. And for cash, Isaiah Taylor, David Nwaba, Jarrell Martin, Trey Burke, Jamal Crawford, Labissiere, Alex Len, Budrick Hield, Bialica, Gibson, Berea, Wiggins, The Baptist, Dinwiddie, Az Gordon, Punchbob, Drew Holiday, Kyrie Irving, Rudy Gobert, Karl Anthony Towns, Jimmy Harden, Tone Davis, and Russell Westbrook. We are done for today's show, guys. If you do like the show and you are listening on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star rating and review. It's a great way of helping out the podcast. You can also find it on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, or on Spotify. And of course, on YouTube, where giving a subscription and clicking that little bell is a great way of supporting the show. And you can also leave a comment and a thumbs up. If you don't know, my name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. So go and follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. Check me out now hosting the Locked On NBA podcast on Mondays and the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network on Twitter at @LockedOnNBAnet. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Damian Lillard.